country. We're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country, leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone, the best in music too. Spend some time in the country, we've been waiting here for you. Here in the country, waiting here for you.
Live from Ontario and heard around the world, welcome to In the Country with Dave Woods. This is the place for up-close and personal interviews, as well as great country music from our featured guests. So sit back and relax. Today's show starts right now.
With over 40 years in the music business and over 300 recorded credits as a songwriter, Charlie Craig has earned the name The Hitmaker. His biggest songs include Wanted, sung by Alan Jackson, and Between an Old Memory and Me, sung by Travis Tritt and Keith Whitley. And the list goes on. And now Charlie has written a book all about his life called Old Memories and Me that tells of his journey in the world of country music. It is my pleasure to welcome singer-songwriter Charlie Craig to the show. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
I am doing wonderful. It's great to hear from you again. I've had you on the show before, and it's always great stories and great music.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I enjoyed the last time we were on, and I appreciate you having me back again.
That's wonderful. Now, I wanted to talk about a lot of different things, but let's first start talking about the book that you've written called Old Memories and Me, which is now available. People can order it through your website and other places on the Internet. Tell us maybe, Charlie, what inspired you now to write this book?
Well, I would say just off the top of my head, 15, 16 years ago, Dave, I decided to start writing the book. I felt like that the fans deserved to. I wasn't a recording artist, and of course my songs had been recorded by recording artists, but myself, I didn't have a connection to the fans, and I wanted to tell the fans, you know, about my career and about the music business, and it was just something that started. I started writing, and as the years passed, it snowballed, and kind of my reason for writing it kind of changed as I went along, and so before I knew it, I had about 15 to 16 years into the writing, and
wow.
I would change this, and I'd go back and change that, and then go back and change it again, and a lot of things happened over those 15, 16 years, but I finally got it finished, and found a publisher called Aberdeen Bay. And they're out of the home office out of Virginia. They have an outlet in a couple of places in the country. I actually talked with a lady first out of Atlanta, but the home office is out of Virginia, and they have the book out. And as you stated, it's on my website. For those that wanted to autograph, they can order it through my website, charliecraig.com, and get it through, you know, with their credit cards, PayPal, and I will mail it to them directly myself and autograph it. But you can buy it from Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, BooksAMillion.com, and actually you can walk into any major bookstore in your town, and it should be in their database. And if they don't have it on the shelf, just ask for it, and they'll find it in their computer and order it for you.
Oh, that's wonderful, Charlie. I know our listeners are going to enjoy reading the book and reading through 40 years of stories in the music business. When you sit down to write over that period of time, a great deal of your life, obviously, what is that like? Is there happy memories, some sad memories? When you're going through it, is it all coming back for you?
Well, it's actually like it was for me. I mean, of course, this is the first time I've written a book, but for me, it was like living my life all over again. So the happy times were happy again. The sad times were happy. I shed a lot of tears writing the book. I laughed a lot. I got angry a few times. It's kind of really like living your life all over again.
Wow.
It's very real. And of course, in 15 or 16 years that I wrote the book, I actually didn't write on it every day. You know, during that period of time, I would do it when the mood would hit me or I had time. But the last year or so, I really sit down and put forth the effort to kind of wind it up and finish the book, and so I could get it out. And of course, the last month or two, I've been after I signed the contract with the publisher, we've been doing a lot of proofreading and a lot of editing, and there's a lot more work to be done than I realized there would be I thought when I finished the book, I was through, but not the case. I had to do a lot of proofreading, and changing formats sometimes would mess up the format. We'd have to, fix some things and things like that. But getting back to your original question, it was like living my life all over again.
That's something. And we're all going to get to share in it as we read it. Then, what are some of the, to give us some hints, some of the artists that you'll be telling stories about or your experience with them in the book?
Well, there's a lot of artists that I talk about my endeavors or meetings with, and a lot of them are more in-depth than others. One of the first ones that I talk about is Mel Tittus, because I met him right after I came to Nashville, and Mel was kind of one of my mentors, and Mel and I just became friends. So there's some little stories in there that maybe they haven't heard before, but basically it's just about Mel Tittus, as you know Mel Tittus, and yeah, his friendship with me, but then Dolly Parton comes into to the story. I signed with Dolly, recorded one of my songs called Chicken Every Sunday. And there's a nice little story about the day I pitched that song to her, and I won't reveal what it is. But then I, probably a year later, I actually signed with Dolly's, and it's a publishing company. It's called Opar Music, and I wrote for Dolly, and I was around her about every day, when her and Porter wasn't out on the road, and a lot of stories there, especially about Dolly and Porter. And of course, Porter continues all through later in the book. And, of course, I kind of lost track of Dolly after so many years, and Dolly kind of moved out on her own. And then, of course, there's a lot in there about Alan Jackson, because I met Alan in 1986, 87, that era, and he was working in the mailroom at TNN, and I was the first person to songwriter to write with him, according to him, and the first person to take him in the studio and actually pay him to sing a demo, and he gives me credit for writing with him when nobody else would, we took it from there and wrote, I think, 11, 12 songs together. And of course, We Won't Want It and Tropical Depression, Bring on the Night. And there's just a lot of wonderful stories about Alan and I. And Vince Gill, there's a brief story about Charlie Daniels, very interesting. A lot about Roy Rogers. I knew Roy Rogers for about 3 years. I was fortunate that Roy would call me when he would come to town, and I would pick him up at the airport and take him around town. There's a wonderful, wonderful story about Andy Griffith in there when he came to town. I spent 3 days with him. It's a great story about that. There's stories like that. It just goes on and on.
It spans quite a bit of time, obviously, from Roy Rogers up to Alan Jackson and more. So it's really a time capsule or whatever, or it's spanning a lot of time within Music City. Charlie, over 40 years of success as a songwriter and still having songs cut today, what do you think it is about you, whereas some other songwriters may have come and gone? What do you think is the secret to your success?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. I think the first thing that popped in my head as I was hearing you ask that question was timing. I kind of mentioned in the book Chris Christopherson. I remember when Chris came to town about, I think, the same time that I did, actually. And I don't know why he left. He left, and, of course, Chris was a Rhodes Scholar. And I don't know where he went when he left and what his intentions were, but he came back. Thank goodness he came back. And when he did, he hit big. I mean, he had those 6 or 7 classics. I mean, they're bigger than classics. Help me Make It Through the Night, For the Good Times, Me and Bobby McGee. Those were all recorded after he came back the second time. So, it wasn't that I was smarter than Chris. I just stuck it out for whatever reason. But Chris left and came back, and when he did, he hit it big. And I struggled through a lot of years, and I talk about it in the book. There's times that I actually gathered up back in the days when pop came in glass bottles and we'd have to put up a deposit. I can remember taking those bottles back, gathering them up from my neighbors and me, and taking them back to the store and getting the deposit back to buy some pork and beans and whatever in the mean days. So, it's timing, I guess. And I've always been one of those songwriters, Dave, that that we got songwriters even today that get on a roll and they get five or six singles a year and become songwriter of the year at BMI and win all kind of awards and make tons of money in a year's time. And I've kind of been the kind of songwriter I would get on a roll for a year and a half, and then I go a year and kind of maybe get one or two album cuts, and then I get hot again and cold again. So I've kind of that kind of a writer, and I think it's timing, it's hard work, and one thing you have to learn the respect of your peers that you're pitching to, the A&R people. And respect is not a word, but their belief in you when you call and know that you're going to bring in a good song, and it's hard to get into those places a lot of times, and you have to build up a reputation in order to do that, and you only build that reputation by trial and error and just hanging out tough and stepping on your own dreams sometimes and almost giving up a lot of times. But I had a wonderful wife that was very strong, and she wouldn't let me quit. But I don't know why. I even say in the books, I don't know why I got the breaks and other people didn't. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, by no means. I came from very humble backgrounds. And
this all started back with the Sears and Roebuck guitar. Was it age 12 or 13?
Yeah, I think I was around 14 when I got that
wow.
first guitar. I was singing on the radio. It wasn't my show, but a gentleman by the name of his name was Bashful Henry as a disc jockey, but his real name was Red Webb, and on Saturdays he was Red Webb and the Blue Sky Rangers, and he left myself and one of my best friends in school, schoolmate of mine, we were 15 years old, we would do duets, and I recall, it's in the book, but I recall two musicians came by to be on the show, and one was in Spartanburg, South Carolina, because this was all happening in South Carolina, my native state. And one came from a little town called Ware Shoals. One of them was Buck Trent, and the other one was Bobby Thompson. And Buck went on to be Porter Wagoner's guitar player. They had that unique banjo guitar sound. And Bobby Thompson wound up working sessions and being in the staff band at Hee Haw. And I find that kind of remarkable in that little town on that 500-watt radio station. When we all just was kids, really, we three of us wound up in Nashville and did pretty well. So it's kind of remarkable when you look back, where we came from, the little small towns, been a little small
wow.
radio station at the same time.
So your first song that you actually wrote for someone else, and you spoke about it before on the show, but can you sort of refresh your memory on the first cut that you got that you felt you were a songwriter at that point?
Well, my first cut was by Hank Locklin, and of course I felt I was a songwriter because Hank Locklin recorded my song. And
for sure.
Hank had that big hit, Send Me the Pillow You Dream On, and of course he had other hits. That was my first cut. But I guess the first cut that I really felt like I had made it, excuse me, I'm sorry, that I had really made it, I had several cuts on RCA and Columbia, and their album cuts. I had one single that was a B-side. Back in those days, they put an A and a B-side out, and I had the B-side of a record that Curly Putman wrote the A-side on a single by the name of Judy Lynn on Columbia. So that was my first single. But I think it took me 10 years to really, really feel like I was accepted as a songwriter, and I got my first BMI award, my first top 10 record, and that was Johnny Cash's recording of I Would Like to See You Again.
Wow. Now, that must have been quite an honor and sort of a dream after 10 years to get that award. So that was a turning point?
Yeah, I'd had a few singles to get in the top 20,
mm-hmm.
and I was very proud of those. And it was increasing my me as a known songwriter, and I was being accepted by my peers. But me personally, I didn't feel like I had really made it until I got a top 10 record and was recognized as an award-winning song. I Would Like to See You Again had been recorded by Dale Reeves on the album, and Kenny Rogers had already recorded it in an album, and I had a Billy Joe Spears single called Rainy Days and Stormy Nights, top 15. So I was doing pretty good before the 10 years, but that 1978 when Johnny Cash recorded "I Would Like to See You Again," and it went to number 10, I think, top 10. It went further higher than that in the few charts, but it won a BMI award, and it was my first hit, you know, and mm-hmm. it won an award, wow. And so it was like, yeehaw, I'm finally a songwriter. So.
That's incredible. Now, looking back over those over the years, Charlie, are there one or two songs that stand out as maybe your personal favorites as far as the final recording of it and just ones that you really are proud of with the finished product of the song?
Well, there's two categories of that for me. From a personal standpoint, my favorite song is a song that I wrote when my wife of 41 years was passing away with lung cancer, and I wrote "What a Day Yesterday Was." That's certainly become one of my favorite songs. And of course, Alan Johnson recorded it. But wow. From a professional standpoint, my two biggest records by far is "Wanted" by Alan Jackson that I wrote with Alan, and also "Between an Old Member and Me" that I wrote with Keith Stewart. Those are two songs that are considered classic by the industry. Mm-hmm. I think "Wanted" is considered by CMT. Now, I have never documented this myself, but I have heard it's listed as one of the top 40 greatest country songs of all time.
Yeah, and I put it up there. It's a beautiful song.
You know, and I got to give Alan Jackson credit for that was his idea, and he had the song already started. So I was very grateful that he asked me to help him write that song, help him finish it. But "One of Between an Old Member and Me" are my two biggest copyrights, and of course there's other that's done really well and still get played after 15-20 years of being out. But those are the two biggest, and they're my two. They're certainly favorites of mine. But "What a Day Yesterday" is "What a Day Yesterday Was." Because of why it was written and who it was written for, it probably tops the list as far as in my heart is being the most sentimental about. And that's actually engraved on their headstone, "What a Day Yesterday Was."
Wow. And no doubt because a song so personal is obviously going to have a big place in your heart. Let's talk about the song "Wanted." So you touched on it, and of course this was a big hit for Alan Jackson that got things started for him. Do you want to tell us a bit about the story? I'm going to be playing the version that you sing, and there's another verse in this, and you talked about this last time and the purpose of that. So maybe just talk a bit about that before we play it, Charlie.
Well, when we wrote the song, Alan told me, he said, I want to come up with a different kind of end, as we say in the business, a twist on the end of it. So we came up with the idea that, of course, the song talks about the singer, the man putting an ad in the paper asking his wife or to forgive him for hurting her, and he's sorry. And so we came up with the idea of the woman, the wife, unknowing that he was putting the ad in the paper, had gone in there before him and put an ad in the paper telling him that she had forgiven him. And so as the lady taking the ad down from the husband, she says, "Have you read this morning's paper?" And he says, "No." And there on page 83, I saw the words that I knew were meant for me. And then it changed this into a new course instead of "Wanted One Foolhardy Man." And so the woman is telling the husband, "I forgive you, come back home." And it ends, "I'm still wanted." But
right.
it made the song, I think, around 5 minutes long. And you have to remember that Alan Johnson, when we wrote this song, he didn't have a record deal. He didn't have anything. And so when Arista signed him, the CEO of the label personally told me, he said, I think that "Wanted" is going to be the song that will break Alan Johnson, you know, make him get him off the ground and get him on his way. Mm-hmm. And but he thought that the other verse made the song too long for a new artist. The radio wouldn't play it, and I'm sure that he was probably right. Now, Alan could record, a song 6 minutes long today, and most radio stations would play it because he is the Alan Jackson today, but back then
he
was an unknown Alan Jackson. So they didn't include that verse on the on Alan's version, but when I recorded my version of it, that was in 1989 when Alan cut that. When I did my version in 2003, I included because I didn't figure I'd get played on the radio anyway, so I put it on there. But people love it. It does. It takes the story to another level, and a lot of people just really love it.
That's very cool. Great story. Thanks, Charlie. And we'll share the song now. This is your version of Wanted here on In the Country. This is Charlie Craig.
Excuse me, ma'am, can you help me? I'd like to place an ad with you today. No, ma'am, tomorrow may be too late. I'd like to have it started right away. What's that? No, this is personal. I'm not buying or selling anything. Yes, ma'am. I know just what to say. I wrote it down, and this is how it should read. One good-hearted woman to forgive imperfection in the man that she loved. Wanted just one chance to tell her how much he still loves her. He can't be sorry. That's all I want to say. I just hope these few lines will get to her. Yes, ma'am. Lord, she means everything. And I hope she comes back when she reads these words. Wanted. One good-hearted woman to forgive imperfection in the man that she loved. Wanted just one chance to tell her how much he still loves her and can't be sorry enough.
That? You say there's something I should read in this morning's paper on page 83. Oh, and then I saw it, and Lord, I almost cried as I read the words that I know were meant for me. They said, wanted one foolhardy man recently hurt her, brought doing her wrong. Wanted just one chance to tell him how much she
Charlie Craig with Wanted here on In the Country. And we are joined by Charlie today. Great to talk with him. Now, back in 1998, you were inducted into the South Carolina Hall of Fame. What did that feel like, Charlie? What did that mean to you?
Oh, I can't put it in words. I mean, the day that gentleman David Godbull, who was his chairman of the board at that time, called me and told me they were inducting me into the Hall of Fame, I thought I misunderstood him. And I couldn't believe that, you know, I come from such humble backgrounds. I grew up on a little cotton mill village, and like 900 people lived there. And I went to a school where everybody grade 1 through grade 12 was in the, basically in the same building. But my wife, as I said, was earlier, you know, she died or passed away of lung cancer in 1998. And so she was actually dying. And I thanked him, and I told him I couldn't leave my wife to go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, because she could be gone any time. And so I told him that one of my sisters would go to the ceremonies, and he said that would be fine. And so after we hung up, I thought that they were kind enough to induct me and give me that honor. I should send at least an acceptance speech. And so Alan Johnson had a video crew that he used back then on his tours, and where they would, you know, televise him while he, or tape him while he was performing live, and they would put it up on this big screen behind him. So I called him, and he said, yeah, I could use his crew. So he was gracious enough to let me use his video crew to do an acceptance speech. So I did an acceptance speech before I actually sent it over there. Wow. David Godbo called me back and told me they had talked about it, and they would like for my wife, Betty, to be able to see me inducted. So they came to Nashville and they inducted me into the Hall of Fame on the Crook and Chase TV show, along with Rob Crosby and Buddy Brocker, both from South Carolina,
right,
as well. So I am very so grateful that they did that for me.
And that clip is available on your MySpace site for anyone wanting to check it out.
Yes, excuse me, I'm sorry. That video is there, so, and it's also on my charliecraig.com. That website is likely being upgraded, but you can get on there and see all the stuff, and it'll be finished in a couple of days. But, yeah, that video is on there, and, of course, it's one of the highest honors ever paid to me. I was very humbled by that, and I'm very grateful for my home state of South Carolina for that honor.
I'll bet, Charlie. And I know that today you continue to work with new and upcoming talent, as you've done over the years. I guess you still have that same excitement when you come across a singer that has that special something?
Well, actually, yes. I just produced several people in the last 6-8 months. And one gentleman, his name is Dylan Robinson. He's out of Louisiana. And there's four labels offering him a contract as we speak now. And I did three sides on him, and actually one of the sides he wanted to record was Between an Old Memory and Me. And he recorded that, and just did a fabulous job on it. But there's four major labels, three majors and one indie, is talking to him. I think they've all made him an offer, and we'll see what, you know, they got to make a decision. It's up to him. He's 18 years old, and just finished school this past year, and I've got another girl from down in the Tampa, Florida area, and I don't know how official this is, but I think that she might be one of the American Idol, I don't know what you call it, the finalists, but the ones that make the TV show.
Right,
I think what we did, it got their attention, so she's going to be on that. And you know, I worked with the Wilkersons back in 98 and 99, and got them signed on to Giant Record. And the first time that they sang for me, I was writing a song on a Friday afternoon. The first song they showed me was, I think, Amanda, who does the lead singing. Amanda Wilkerson was 13. Tyler was 11. Of course, they're from Canada. And
you got it. Yep.
So the first song they sang from me was 26 Cent, and I just canceled my writing appointment, started calling record labels, and they said, well, we've heard them, but they're kids, and they won't sell records. And I said, well, they don't sound like kids. And I said, remember David, he killed Goliath. He was a kid. I said, remember Alan Jackson? I told you he was a star. And I get the same feeling with these. But nothing really happened at the time. And Mike Curb took a chance on 14-year-old Leanne Rimes, and of course she put out Blue, and that's history. That was a smash, and now the whole industry remember this little 13-year-old girl and her brother, 11 years old, and the dad. So 3 years later, they were on Giant Records, and when Amanda was 16 years old singing lead, that went to number one.
I remember that was such a huge hit when it came out, the song and the video. The Wilkinsons were pretty huge in North America.
Oh, yeah, all over, and they had hits down in, they went on a tour down in Australia and didn't know until they got there, but Jimmy's Got a Girlfriend with Tyler singing the lead was number one there, and they didn't even know it until they got there.
Wow.
And they've been to Afghanistan, I think, twice. They've done a lot, you know, for the American troops. And of course, they're back in Canada now and touring up there. And in fact, I just tried to call Steve today and left him a message. And just absolutely became my second family. I just love them dearly.
Oh, that's wonderful, because we, yeah, here in Canada, we're so proud of them and the great music they've done. Now,
well, they should be. They're just awesome. I mean, not only are they just immensely talented, they're just absolutely wonderful people, not just the three that sing, but Chris, the mother and stage wife, and his other daughter, Kaya. She's a beautiful young lady. She must be about 17 now, and they're just absolutely wonderful people.
That's wonderful, Charlie. Now, one of your new projects is a Billy Joe Royal CD, the great, of course, legend Billy Joe. Now, can you tell us about the CD? I know you've got a bunch of songs on it, and we're going to play Hard Rock to Roll in just a moment.
Well, I wrote Hard Rock to Roll about a year or so ago, and I actually was writing some gospel songs for the first time. Hard Rock to Roll is not, I guess, labeled as a gospel song, but it can pass as a gospel, because in the last part of it, it talks about our Savior Jesus Christ. But it's just a song, and it's a good song, and some people call it a great song. And Billy Joe recorded it, and three others that I wrote on the CD. And
wow,
and he's got a new gospel album coming out with 12 gospel songs, and I was fortunate that I wrote 10 of those 12. And so Hard Rock to Roll is on both of them, and that released Hard Rock to Roll as a single. And we've been getting a lot of airplay, the last month. And
right.
I think last week I saw on the report for the people that's doing the promotion, we had like 1,123 spins last week. And
that's great.
So it's just doing really great. And Billy does a great job on it. And I'm thankful to him for recording that. I actually produced the tracks on that particular song off of that album. And Nelson Arkin produced the rest of that country album. I produced all the tracks on the gospel album.
Wow. And for those who aren't totally sure, I like to ask this question about a producer. For example, in this case, Charlie, when you're producing it, so you're trying to bring out the best in the song, obviously, and you're deciding which instruments are going to appear where in the song, that kind of thing?
Yes, and you have to give the musicians credit. Once you hire the musicians, you know, I learned a long time ago that to be successful, you surround yourself with successful people, and we have the greatest musicians in the world. And I've said for many years now, you can duplicate the best studio that we have in Nashville in any little town in America or North America or the world, and be just as good as what we have here. But you wouldn't have anything but an expensive studio and building without these musicians. They're just a special breed, and so they offer their ideas when you're recording a song. You know, the guitar player will come up with a lick. The piano player may come up with something. Maybe the drummer. It's a team effort, really. But the producer is kind of like the chief, and you know, somebody makes the final call on something. And the producer most of the time gets all the credit. But there's a lot more than just what the producer does. He gets a lot of help from those musicians too.
Very cool. Charlie, now we'll play that song now that we talked about, Hard Rock to Roll. Brand new music written by Charlie Craig and sung by Billy Joe Royal here on In the Country.
He had holes in his shoes. His clothes were wearing thin. 34 degrees, felt like 20 in the wind. Slept in a cardboard box three nights in a row. That's gotta be a hard rock, a hard rock to roll. She turned 22 with a baby in her arms, another on the way, trying to make it on her own. The daddy of her children was killed in a war 2 months ago. That's gotta be a hard rock, a hard rock to roll. That's a hard rock to roll. That's a mighty heavy load. Till you've lived it, you can't know. That's a hard rock to roll. Hills we're gonna have to climb, but Jesus climbed the highest one of all for us this time. They nailed him to a cross when his last breath was gone. They laid him in a tomb, sealed it with a stone. 3 days later, he arose. Had to be a hard rock to roll, but that rock roll, that's a hard rock to roll. That's a mighty heavy load. Till you've lived it, you can't know. That's a hard rock to roll.
That's a hard rock.
That's a hard rock to roll. Till you live it, you can't know. That's a hard rock to roll.
Hard rock to roll, brand new music from Billy Joe Royal and written by our guest, Charlie Craig. Great song, Charlie. Great message and wonderfully sung.
But I appreciate that. And he did a great job on it. And if you'll email me your mailing address, Dave, I'll send you the complete album that is called Hard Rock to Roll. Billy, you know, had Down in the Boondocks, and everybody probably remembers that, and Like a Rocket. And now Nelson Larkin produced the rest of that album. And they did three songs from out of the 50s, Rockin' Robin, C.C. Rider, and Little Bitty Pretty One. And the rest of them are pretty well, you know, today's type of country. And it's just an absolutely fantastic album. If you'll email me your mailing address, I'll send you an album so you have the whole album there.
Oh, definitely, Charlie. I would love that. And I'd love to speak to Billy Joe at some point, too. Wonderful artist. Now, I want to get back to your books, which is called Old Memories and Me. And for our listeners listening who've had a chance to hear some of the stories from it and little hints at it, remind us again where we can purchase that book, Charlie.
Alrighty, if you want an autograph for me personally, you can go to charliecraig.com. You don't have to put the www. You can if you like, but if you just put charliecraig.com, it takes you right to my webpage, and you can order it through PayPal. Use your credit card, and as soon as PayPal notifies me, they'll give me the address and it's been paid for, and I will within 24 hours I'll autograph it and put it back in the mail to you, or if you prefer to order from Amazon.com, Books-A-Million.com, BarnesandNoble.com. And it's released in Canada, the U.S., and Europe. And so you can just about any bookstore, that if you're in a mall somewhere, you walk in. At this early point, they may not have it on the shelf yet, but it's in their computer in the database, and it'll show up, and they can order it for you. So there's a lot of ways you can get it, but if you want it autographed, you can order through, go charliecraig.com and buy it through there and pay for it with your credit card. I'll be doing some book signings. I'm doing one this Saturday here in Nashville at Robert Mills Mall at Barnes & Noble. The first of the year, I'm hoping to get out in more cities around the country and maybe even up in Canada and do some book signings at some of the bookstores.
Oh, that'd be terrific to have you in Canada for sure. We would love to have that. Are there any artists Charlie, after all these years, the 40 years in the music business, is there still an artist you're looking to have record one of your songs that hasn't happened yet?
No, without a doubt. Merle Haggard.
Ah.
But he writes such great songs, you know, himself. And George Jones, you know, those two are just, to me, the pity of me of the true traditional great country singers. And, of course, George is not a bad songwriter. He's wrote a lot more songs than people realize he's wrote. But Merle Haggard, I don't know. I kind of, back in South Carolina, even in my 20s, and I was just kept thinking, I want to be a Merle Haggard. You know, I want to be a singer-songwriter like Merle Haggard, even though I knew I wasn't as good as Merle. But still, he was one of my heroes, and Carl Perkins was a great inspiration. But if I had to pick one artist today that was going to sing my song, he's never singing, I could only pick one, I'd have to go with Merle Haggard.
Wow, great choice. Great legend, and let's keep our fingers crossed. I'm sure you're going to write a song that's going to fit him just right.
I've already got one if he's looking.
Perfect. Well, Charlie, it has been a true pleasure speaking with you again. The time always flies by. I love hearing the stories and of course, hearing the songs as well. I want to wish you all the best with the book. I'm looking forward to my copy, which I've ordered, and I'll be reading it with a lot of enjoyment, as I know our listeners will.
I really appreciate that. Appreciate you having me on, and especially talking about the book and this uncharted waters for me with the book. But two people have already got it, and a couple of people have finished reading it already, and I've been getting emails, a couple of phone calls. They say they can't put it down, so
that's
good music to my ears. It's almost like
yep.
a good song. So
that's a great compliment.
I appreciate you telling the people about it and playing the music you played today and having me on your show again, Dave.
Definitely. Thanks, Charlie. It's always great to talk with you.
Well, thank you, and God bless you, man.
My guest today has been singer, songwriter, and author Charlie Craig. Be sure to pick up his book, Old Memories in Me. I'm Dave Woods. Thanks for spending time in the country.
Spend some time in the country. We're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country. Leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone. The best in music, too. Spend some time in the country. We've been waiting here for you. Here in the country.